Now, 8:30, I'd like to call to order the conference call of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. It is February the 2nd, 2018. I will do a roll call, and then we'll get started. Commissioner Baker.
I'm on.
Commissioner Keeney.
I'm here.
Commissioner Smith.
Here, sir.
Commissioner Grayville.
Here.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Here.
Commissioner Hosemiller. Commissioner Kehoe.
I'm here, thank you.
You bet. Commissioner McIsaac.
Present.
Okay, and this is Commissioner Carpenter. I'm present. We are short Commissioner Hosemiller currently, but we have a quorum. From staff, Joe Storr, I assume you're there. Would you like to introduce who's available?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Vice Chair. Sitting here in the NRB on the fifth floor, I'm here with Bill Freymeyer, Susan Mink, Darren Fidel, Michelle Dunlop. I believe Ron Warren's up on the sixth floor.
That's correct. Ron Warren here. I have Kyle Addix and Craig Burley with me.
And Mike Grossman, I believe, is on the phone from Portland.
I believe so.
Yes, that's correct. Good morning, commissioners. I just want to confirm that you're able to hear me. I'm down at the USB Oregon Policy Committee meeting, and the CRTFIC staff have kindly loaned me a conference room. I just want to confirm that the hands-free option is loud and clear.
We hear you loud and clear, Mike. Has Commissioner Hosemiller joined us?
I just got on, Larry.
Good morning, Jake. Okay, we're ready to go on agenda item A. This is a petition, convert North of Falcon policy to rule, and this is a decision.
Vice Chair Carpenter, Commissioners, this is Ron Warren with the Fish and Wildlife Fish Program. Just a bit of background. On December 21st of 2017, two groups, the Washington Citizens Sportsmen and the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy, submitted a joint position petition for rulemaking. The petition requests that the Commission take action to adopt this the current North of Falcon policy, C-3608, as a formal rule. The general crux of the issue, or in summary, is that, as you all know, we've had a difficult time with the transparency issue in general with the public. By the petitioner's own words, simply put, we cannot find any documented effort by the department to provide transparency over the co-management process. Our two groups believe it is time for the commission to insert itself in a clear and precise fashion that would hopefully result in appropriate level of consideration by the department. So, again, petitioners are requesting that the North of Falcon policy be sent out through the APA process for language consideration. They do not offer language of what that rule would look like, but to take that through a rulemaking process. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Mike Grossman for a legal analysis of the petition.
Good morning, commissioners. I will reference some slides that I prepared and transmitted to all of you as part of my legal briefing. As a reminder to the public, they're available on the commission's website under the agenda item if people want to go over them and take a look at what I'm working from. There's also a staff green sheet there that I think goes into the department's perspective on this. I'm going to stick to the legal framework and help you think about the background for the request, what you need to grapple with, and because this involves some issues that we've together worked on in terms of traversing a path between rulemaking and policymaking and have successfully navigated in terms of protecting your policies from legal challenge, notably the Wolpa Bay policy, the Columbia River policies, I'll be spending a little bit of time talking to you about what we've advocated for and what the courts have agreed with us on. So So let me start first with the fundamental statute involved here that the petitioners proceed from. It's part of the Administrative Procedures Act, RCW 3405-230. That is a provision that notices that there is a difference between rulemaking and policymaking. Some states, like Oregon, and you may recall this from the Columbia River policy issue, some states require rules to be adopted as, policies to be adopted as rules. Washington has chosen a different approach. It recognizes that sometimes agencies want policies that aren't binding, that are guidance-oriented, and can implement those policies with rules rather than adopting the policies themselves as rules. And that's the way we've proceeded in the past. So at the same time, RCW 3405-230 recognizes that the public has a stake in policies, and that particular statute encourages the daylighting of policies and public involvement in policymaking to, as I will quote from the statute, better inform and involve the public in those kinds of decisions that may ultimately have an impact on them as citizens. So what I'm going to do is kind of go through that statute pretty quickly. I want you to understand what process you need to engage with this petition, which that statute provides a basis for in terms of your decision-making process, and then talk a little briefly about what some of the principles are that animate this statutory provision that encourage but don't require agencies to sometimes convert longstanding policies into rules. So, with regard to the process, a person can petition an agency, and within 60 days after submission of the petition, the agency shall either deny the petition in writing, stating the reasons for the denial, or initiate a rulemaking proceeding in accordance with the provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act. So basically, we're here within that 60-day time frame, and you are tasked with making a decision on this petition, and there really are two courses of action. You can decide to move forward with the rulemaking petition, in which case you would then transition to the rulemaking process, issue a CR 101 indicating your intent to engage in a rulemaking process, take public comment, issue a CR 102, which would outline the proposed rule, and again, take some public comment, and finally make a decision on an ultimate rule, whether to adopt, change, or ultimately decide to quit the rulemaking process. The alternative is to deny the petition, but if you're going to deny the petition, you have a duty to identify the reasons for that decision to deny. There is some fairly recent case law that helps you think a little bit about that. It's not terribly complicated. Squaxin Island Tribe versus the Department of Ecology took up that issue. Basically, the court said that agencies have wide discretion when deciding on a rulemaking petition. Your only duty is to make sure that you confront the issues that are identified in the rulemaking petition for why a rule is being sought or why the petitioners seek to have a policy converted to a rule, and you have to explain your decision when you ultimately render it. So I want to again point out that fundamentally the issues I think behind the statute are the legislature has indicated that sometimes agencies don't daylight their policies, and so there's a desire to have those things daylighted so people can see the policy and grapple with it. The other issue that lies behind the encouragement to adopt longstanding policies as rules is to better inform and involve the public. So you should be thinking about those things as you make a decision on this petition. Is there good daylighting of agency policy, and are there mechanisms out there for this policy to inform and involve the public? I think those are the fundamental principles that ought to be the starting point for your decision-making process. So I'd like to spend just a little bit more time talking about some of the stuff that we learned as we grappled with these similar issues when you develop policies like Willapa and the Columbia River, and what the differences are between rules and policies. So a rule fundamentally is an order or directive of general applicability with binding legal effect or consequences that affect identified public rights and responsibilities. By contrast, what's not a rule? The APA also touches on that. For example, it says in the definition of a role that statements concerning only the internal management of an agency and not affecting private rights or procedures available to the public are not rules. And then we have the Sudar case, which was the litigation over your policy on the Columbia River, and what we argued there is that the way you as a commission engage in policymaking is to engage the public openly and to develop policies with public input, and then you task staff or sometimes yourselves with implementing policy through rules. So on that basis, we were able successfully to fend off a challenge to the policy without the context of implementing rules, and the court agreed with us that the policymaking process the commission used is open, involves the public, and is not justiciable, which is a fancy legal term for saying something capable of being challenged in itself. Instead, what the public needs to do when policies affect them is to wait until an implementing rule comes out and challenge the substance of a rule, because then the facts and circumstances particular to how that rule will affect them as a member of the public is the right place for any kind of challenge to occur. So now, moving to the APA principles, the first one that's talked about is informing and involving the public. So it's clear, and I think the petitioners are right here, that the formal APA rulemaking process provides an open forum to identify an agency policy and to solicit public comment. I think that what we learned from doing the research behind the legislation here is that oftentimes there are public agencies that do policymaking without a lot of public involvement. And so the encouragement here to inform and involve the public really applies most critically to those agencies that don't do that. By contrast, I think you would agree that your policymaking process is very open and transparent. You have multiple meetings, and the commission publishes its policies, so they're well known to the public. They're on your website. They're filed with the code revisor. And I think it's fair to say, but it's for you to grapple with, whether that there is a lot of public involvement, information, and ability to connect with you as you develop your policies like the North of Falcon policy. So with regard to informing and involving the public, my sense is that your policymaking process is different than what the legislature was thinking about when it thought about policies that are sometimes developed behind closed doors. I think that's perhaps a key difference, but something you'll want to think about when you want to consider whether additional or different kinds of processes should be used to develop your policies, say, for example, as the petitioners are requesting a rulemaking process. In terms of engaging the APA principles, there is, I think, an interesting crosswalk here between enforceable rules and policies, and I think it becomes of particular significance when we talk about what is the purpose for a particular policy. I think the North of Falcon policy is a conversation between the commission and staff. It's a direction to do particular kinds of things and to try and achieve particular kinds of objectives. And so in that sense, it's not a policy that is like an interpretive statement where an agency says, well, when you regulate this person or that person, here's how you should do it. It's more like a policy that says, staff, we have values, and when we have directed you to go out and engage in rulemaking or develop plans with tribal co-managers, we want you to bring these values and these kinds of procedures to the process. So my sense is that the North of Falcon policy is more like a communication with staff, and in that sense, I think that marries up to the part that we talked about in terms of what a rule and what a rule isn't. One of the things you should be asking yourself, I think, then is our North of Falcon policy more like an internal policy that applies to staff, or is this one of those things that the legislature was talking about, a policy that reaches out and regulates members of the public and therefore is more like a rule, an order or directive of general applicability? So that should be something that's part of your decision-making process here, is do we view this particular North of Falcon policy as a conversation and a directive to staff, or something that reaches out and affects members of the public in some way that affects their rights or concerns. The last thing I guess I want to talk about is the petitioners point out that one of their concerns is that policies are advisory and rules are enforceable. And I think that's actually quite a good distinction here and quite correct. And that was really the basis for our success in both Willapa and the Columbia River, is that we argued your policies were guidance to staff. They were strong presumptive guidance. And clearly, I think you expect staff to pay very close attention to your policies. And to the extent that you have concerns about whether staff are doing that, I think that's within your power to continue to have conversations with staff. And if you feel a correction is required, to either have that conversation with staff or amend your policy to be more clear. We argued successfully that because policies are not a regulation of the public and don't affect public legal rights, they aren't something that is subject to judicial review. And I think one of the things that the petitioners have been thinking would be helpful is if they had a policy converted to a rule, it would somehow create a enforceable duty that they could enforce and that they could do so with litigation. And in fact, I think one of the petitioners has indicated that adopting the North of Falcon policy as a rule would, quote, allow us to sue if needed. So I think you need to ask your, first I will say I don't agree with that perspective. I still think that since your policies are guidance to staff, they don't meet the definition of a legally binding rule. Even if you call it a rule, it would be more like an advisory rule. So I question whether or not they're even correct about whether or not converting the North of Falcon policy could lead to lawsuits by them if they felt dissatisfied with the way transparency issues or other directives in your policy converted to a rule were being carried out. But even assuming that that were the case, that a lawsuit could now be brought to enforce policy by them rather than you being the enforcer of policy, I think you should ask yourself, do you want to invite that kind of thing where instead of you being in control of your policies, you're now inviting people to bring lawsuits with regard to your policies? I think that should be part of your decision-making process. So that's my perspective on the legal landscape surrounding the statute at issue here and the petition that's been brought to you and what some of the things are that you should consider as you grapple with a decision about whether to move forward with rulemaking on the policy or to deny the petition. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions of Mike? Comments?
Vice Chair Carpenter, this is Ron Warren from Fish Program. I would like to, hearing none, I don't want to stifle any decision or discussion by the Commission in sharing thoughts about the presentation thus far. But I would like to inform you of a staff decision or staff recommendation to the Commission on this particular topic. We've had extensive conversations internally about this, as well as with counsel, and greatly appreciate all the thought that's gone into this. Our recommendation is to deny the petition. And I'd like to share with you some thoughts, at least that I have, with why I am offering that as a staff recommendation. I look back at some of the most recent policies that we've that the Commission has put in place, and I point to some of the attachments, the Grays Harbor Salmon Management Policy C-3621 and the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy, C-3622, and we've just attached excerpts from presentations that have been given to you in the past to describe the extensive public outreach and meeting and public opportunity to comment on the development of policies, and believe that that is much more extensive than the rulemaking process allows, defines. So with that, as well as just another piece of information, regardless of the North of Falcon policy, if it could be adopted as an enforceable state rule, it would not independently bind either the individual sovereign treaty tribal governments or NOAA fisheries into opening those state tribal meetings to achieve the transparency that I believe that this petition is seeking to do. And I'd answer any questions that the commission might have.
Larry, this is Bob. I have a question.
Chair, this is Kinnick.
Commissioner Keogh.
Yeah, hey, Ron, can you just, I know there's been several letters traded between the department and Northwest Indian Fish Commission, you know, kind of several proposals back and forth. Can you just summarize where we're currently at with respect to ICE position, the most recent position in response to the director's letter several weeks ago or months ago about this topic?
Vice Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Keogh, thank you. The summary really is that as we have attempted to have observers, other forms of way to transmit the meetings as suggested ideas between us and the Northwest Indian Fish Commission, they have stood on the sovereign immunity position, but have agreed to this year to have a plenary session. We've had an initial conversation about that plenary session earlier this week with policy representatives from the Puget Sound tribes and the Northwest Indian Fish Commission, and are working to finalize a date on that, as well as what might be covered. But typically those cover the conservation objectives and why those objectives are in place, so that the public can see and interact a bit with the tribal community as well as the state. So as briefly as I can, that's probably the best position I can provide you on that topic.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Keeney.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I think, you know, my thoughts go along with the recommendation of staff, because I feel we do have an open public policies that are clearly identified in countless meetings on subjects such as this, and are taking our input from the public. But I think as I read what they're after here is that is the commission providing clear instructions to staff relating to transparency and implementation of the NOF policy? I believe we have done that. I think maybe the petitioners are looking for answers to questions they've asked several times. And so I think maybe I'd like to ask a couple. I think it was brought up by the folks in the audience, anyway, that gave testimony on this several times. Why can't we have cameras in a room, and just so that they don't have to be in the room, but they could see and hear what's going on? So I'll ask, has that been looked into, and what was the answer, and why could we or could we not do that?
Vice Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Keeney, this is Ron Warren. We did suggest that type of transmittal of the meeting to allow the general public to see what was going on. As far as the technicalities of how we would do that, we haven't researched that, wanting to get some initial buy-in or approval of that. That has not occurred at this time. And tribes not wanting to allow the public in to hear the negotiations in the North of Falcon as they claim a government-to-government meeting taking place.
and I would just, I guess, ask or for thought, for discussion. When the public wants something like that and thinks it's reasonable, and it actually does seem very reasonable to me as well, but the partner in this negotiation who has the authority to decide what they want in terms of public observation, independent of what the department wants, and we cannot get around that, and we've tried and tried and tried, there's no rule in my mind that will change that. There's all we can continue to do is direct staff to look for opportunities and ways to make this more public. And I would suggest, for instance, just keeping that on a top burner. You know, any type of suggestion that might work or that they might be able to open these up more to the public, you know, that's the type of direction I think the commission can give staff. And I believe you're doing that. The public needs to know what you're doing, though. They need to know that you followed that line of suggestion up, hit a brick wall, what is the brick wall, and you're still trying.
Vice Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Keeney, thank you very much for that. I just in further on that topic, we currently have 27 meetings scheduled for the North Falcon process around the state. East side and west side, those only count the meetings that are in locations where we invite the public. So one meeting for the PFMC, Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting. But one thing to remember at those meetings, we meet with the general public at first thing in the morning at 7 o'clock. We go over our state positions. We typically can get back together at noon to let them know what advances or roadblocks we've seen to the positions that we have. And again, at night, we do the same thing 4 or 5 days in a row. So there are multiple meetings. We have tried to offer conference calls so people can listen into that, ask questions. That has had some limited success. We are continuing to look for other avenues to continue to communicate and communicate in different ways as we progress through each year of North Falcon. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Ron.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none. Does anyone have a motion?
Commissioner Thorburn, I move to deny this, the petition as presented by staff, and after a second, I will make some comments in addition to, I think, Commissioner Keeney's observations as to why I've made the motion.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Keeney seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Commissioner Thorburn.
I appreciated counsel's analysis and believe that, as has been noted by previous commissioner's statements, that our policies provide direction to staff if we are dissatisfied with staff's acceptance of our guidance. We have options to deal with that, such as clarifying the policy. Our policies, we do use a very open process to develop our policies, so I think that concern is dealt with. And I also think that it would be irresponsible on the part of the commission to establish something that might be litigated, even though counsel thinks that it could be successfully defended. I think it's of concern that we're responsible for guidance to staff, taking public input and providing that guidance, but if it were done by the courts, it might not be satisfactory to us nor our public. So I think that the process of developing policies and providing that guidance is a better way in this case than rule.
Any other comments?
Yeah, Commissioner Caney.
Commissioner Caney, thank you.
Thank you. I would agree with Commissioner Thornburn, and looking at the petition, and one of the things that stands out to me is petitioners feel that staff has not done a good job of carrying out our policies on transparency in relation to NOF negotiations, stating we cannot find any documented effort by the department to provide transparency over the co-management process. I think documentation can be provided and would suggest that we do a good job of that, or suggest to staff that we do that, and maybe open up a better way of communicating to the people of this petition and others that are concerned about this, of the steps we're taking. And I don't think a rule will improve that. I think, you know, direction to staff can maybe improve that, and I believe staff is doing a good job trying to find ways to make this more transparent. But if people can't find documentation of that, then rumors fly or people don't feel it's being done. So that's one suggestion I would have, is to get the things we're doing documented. If the answer from the tribes is no, that's what the answer is. But it doesn't mean we don't document what we've done and let the public know we're really listening to them and trying to make this as open as we can possibly make it.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Commissioner McIsaac.
In other cases where we have denied a petition, we've thought about different ways for the petitioners to maybe get some of their concerns addressed. In their petition, they have an excerpt from our current policy for North of Falcon C608 that has a header of communications. And the current policy describes how we have currently tried to deal with issues of being open and transparent within the constraints we have. That is on our year at a glance for being taken up in March. So I wondered whether or not, and I'm going to speak in favor of the motion to deny, but in trying to explore other alternatives, I wonder when we get to our February meeting and take on the agenda for March, if it might be possible to encourage people to come and testify in March on the North of Falcon policy as to any ideas they have that could alter the language in the policy to try to address some of their concerns. Absent going to the school process.
So any other comments?
I guess that's a question to commissioners, if there's any sympathy for that or to not do that, or maybe a question to the staff if there's some difficulties in opening that door.
Larry, may I make a comment?
Please.
The March meeting is in Wenatchee, just as a heads up to all.
Yeah.
Commissioner Thorburn, don't we usually have public input when we have briefings on the policies? Or we could make that a piece of this briefing.
Yes, Commissioner Thorburn, we do usually have that, and I believe we were moving the North of Falcon later in the year, as we don't have to do the review until 2018.
Okay.
Thank you, Tammy.
Thanks.
Any other comments or questions?
This is Commissioner Graybill. I think all of our commissioners are aware that the departments have made efforts to answer the questions of the petitioners earlier last year. Their requests prompted the conversation with the tribes that Lorraine Loomis responded to. And, you know, I think Jay Keeney touched on it. As long as the answer from that group is no, then we really have to remind the petitioners and other commissioners that there isn't a lot we can do from our side as a co-manager about transparency at North of Falcon. And, you know, a petition seems like it'd be more appropriate to be approached to the tribes, because ultimately they make the decision. And a petition, a request, a letter from the department really doesn't answer their questions, and that these concerns need to be addressed to the tribes is my suggestion to the petitioners. That's my comment.
Thank you, Commissioner Graybill. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Motion carries. We now move